From all corners of the globe to your ears, it's the Midnight Movie Cowboys. Sometimes informative, sometimes controversial, but always unpredictable. It's the Midnight Movie Cowboys podcast with your hosts, Hunter, John, and Stu. And now, on with the show. Hey, welcome to the Midnight Movie Cowboys. I am your host, John. This week, I'm hosting. With me tonight is Stu in Australia. Stu, say hello.
Hello from isolation.
Yes. And also joining us tonight, a returning guest, Frank Blackman, who we like to have on during our Kung Fu movie episodes. So say hello, Frank.
Hello, everybody.
All right. Tonight's episode, we're going to be covering Joseph Kwo's World of the Drunken Master, which we are taking advantage of its high definition presence on the recent Eureka Blu-ray box set, which I highly recommend. Please do get yourself a holy hand grenade Blu-ray player so you can play any Blu-ray from around the world. Yes, there you go. But I guess to kick it off, we need to do whip out your junk. And I'll just go ahead and start. And because I don't have much, I just have a couple of used CDs. These are the Carlos, to read this accurately, because it looks like R. Carlos Nakai, who is an Indian flute player, Native American, I guess we would say, politically correct. Basically, this is sort of like meditation music. It's very cheap to get. Apparently, this cat had a deal with major labels at one point and got this stuff released. So if you want your house to feel like a monastery or a peace pipe ceremony, I highly recommend this music. It's quite beautiful, but some of us, we need to meditate. Can't always listen to Iron Maiden and AC/DC and Radio Birdman all the time. So Stu, what junk are you whipping out?
That sounds like the feel or the aura over at the Krishna temple when I go. Very similar. Yeah. All right. I've got a little bit, so I will try and keep it moving as quick as I can. All right. We've got one. Oh, here we go. We'll start this one. All right. Brand new. The live album, Natural Pussies Eaten Alive. Awesome.
Pretty good.
Full on.
Okay. All right.
Great. Very hard to get, though, from here anyway, because I'd go on Amazon, available. 10 minutes later, unavailable. Available, unavailable. And managed to snag it when it was available at a really, really low price. I thought, buy it now. And this is that band that was, they never put out a bad album ever.
Yeah, they rock.
Oh, God, yeah. One, I missed back in 99, I think it was, or 2000, whatever it was. Can't remember. Never thought I'd see it again, and I did. Misfits, Cuts from the Crypt.
Oh, wow.
This is the B-sides and demos and compilation songs I did. Never thought I'd see it again. Found that thing. That was $12 at the store. Of course, wouldn't be a whip out your junk without a disco album. Studio 54, Volume 2.
Oh, wow.
We got for $3. Need Volume 1. Which is not easy to come by over here. What else we got here?
I have an MP3 somewhere if you need to be that desperate. But I know you wanted it.
Got them on those, Volume 1 and 2. But, I like the physical stuff.
Right.
$2, Guttermouth, Covered in Ants. Collecting my Guttermouth albums. Another game we can play, which Weezer albums did Stuart pick up this week? Well, this one he picked up, which I thought I had these two. Weezer, the Blue Album, $2.
That's a great album.
Oh, my God, yeah. It drags on the last three songs, and just a bit, but the other seven before it are strong as. This one I thought I had, but I didn't. And this one I think is better. Maladroit, their fourth one.
I remember it being really good. I don't know if better, but yeah, maybe.
This one's basically their heavy rock album. It's definitely the heaviest album I've ever done. This one, I never thought I would ever see. Oh, sorry. I picked this one up for $2, but it's going straight into the Discogs pile. Marilyn Manson's Eat Me, Drink Me, fucking awful album. I thought $2. It should be. Oh, it's nothing like the first album, the Portrait of American Family, which is, I will grant them, a great album. Fantastic. Here's one I thought, I never thought I'd get, not cheap and not in Australia. But I did. Rocket from the Crips, Hot Charity album. Fucking hell. The best,
oh, really?
Best one of 95. Best album of any band from 1995. Even better than this Scream, Dracula Scream album. And on here is also the Cut Carefully and Play Loud EP. Wow. Full on. I will be doing a ranking the albums of Rocket from the Crypt, I promise you, soon.
I saw them open for Rancid back in 1996.
Yeah, I saw, yeah. Oh, man, that was the prime time to get them. I saw them in 96. I think it was October 96. They were out for the Scream, yeah. Scream Tour. And, oh, man, they were electric. One of the best fucking shows I've ever seen. And finally, a movie I've picked up in the last few weeks. It's just been CDs. $2. Seen it a couple of times, but never owned it until now. Autofocus.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Good film.
We've been talking about that a lot lately.
We did, yeah. And luckily, funnily enough, I was in the store. I thought, shit, autofocus for $2. Done. I'm sold.
There you go.
Yep. And that's it for me this week.
All right. Mr. Black Man, do you have anything to whip out this week? It's got to be consumer products, not the other possibility.
Well, since you guys have been talking about The Farmer, I ordered my copy. Yeah, the Blu-ray, and along with some other Shaw Brothers stuff from 88 Films.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing I have right now is my copy of this book here.
Yeah. Oh, there you go. Yeah.
And this is probably my favorite book on the subject. I mean, we got the Bay Logan book that's been out there, and the first book from like 85, and this blows everything away.
Yeah, yeah, it's a fun book.
And another thing I like about it is it tells it from the American perspective, which is like really unheard of.
Well, just remind me or just enlighten me, what's it about? Like,
it's about out from the American movie boom in the States, like the theatrical. We talked about it's, they basically focus on the New York area stuff, and you know they talk about a few minor key figures in martial arts in America, you know, in general. They mentioned Aaron Banks a few times. Joe Lewis, you know, the LA stuff. And you know, just I think they even mention they talk about Blood on the Sun, and then I actually have it on DVD, but they mention this old, it's called Karate the Hand of Death, is a black and white film from like 1961. Real campy and cheesy, but I mean, they put it out there.
It was made by a CIA agent.
You can't make that crap up, honestly.
Yeah, it has a lot of crazy stuff like that. That because I read the book a few weeks ago. I sent a contributor's copy by Chris, and Chris Poggioli is one of the co-authors of the book. And what it does is it examines everything through a lot of these films in the 70s were released by New York distributors. So there's a lot of new, crazy, just nutty New York stories about getting these films into theaters. And also some of the distributors in LA have some stories as well. And it's all from that American market perspective or marketplace perspective, which makes it a bit different from Bay Logan's book, which just talks about Europe and Asia. It doesn't go into the history of the films as much. It's just sort of a surface thing, but it's more accessible for American readers than a lot of the previous books.
There's another book out by a guy named Steve Carriage. It looks good. Like there's a lot of good pictures, but again, that tells it from the UK perspective.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So I'm curious, was there any, that's probably a stupid question, was there ever any mob involvement in these films being distributed in the 70s?
Yeah, Bryanston Pictures, Way of the Dragon.
And then Michael Fevis, who had distributed a Wang Yu movie called Blood of the Dragon. Yeah, he was
a
pornographer slash, you know, did some funny tax evasion stuff.
Okay.
Yeah, I think I think he was killed in prison or something like that. Or he escaped from prison. He's killed in his driveway. Some crazy story. He's out of Atlanta, Georgia. He's somebody that Mike Malloy, Eric's filmmaking friend, knew a lot about. I think he did some investigation into, and that's detailed in the book as well.
Now, I remember the late Lynn Haynes saying that the soundtrack from that band was like recorded from like where he stayed at once, I think. Because that's where he was. He was in Atlanta.
Yeah. I know somebody who's gotten in contact with those musicians, and we're trying to convince them, hey, release it on MP3 on Amazon or something, because we want that soundtrack for Blood of the Dragon. It's this very ahead of its time, new wave sounding music. It's a really cool theme. It's only on the American version, but as far as I know, those guys are pretty bitter because they kind of got screwed over by that pornographer / movie producer distributor who I think he was trying to start a record label as a cover up for his mob shenanigans. Yeah. And kind of hosed them over. So let's get to the movie. We're discussing World of the Drunken Master. This is a 1979 production, if my notes are correct, of Joseph Quo, kind of made to cash in on the whole Drunken Master, Snake in the Eagle Shadow, box office success of those two Jackie Chan movies directed by Yin Wu Ping. Excellent, films of their time. And of course, started a boom where you get all these ripoffs. Try to get up a good credits page so I don't screw up any of these Chinese names that are very easy to mess up. Let's see here. Man, I want the Love Hong Kong Film site on that, the IMDb. It's in a way, it's funny when I watch it today. It's supposed to tell the story of Beggar So and another character. Frank Blackman, do you remember this? This angle in it, because I know Beggar So is one of the characters. Was it
the other guy is named Fan or something? The guy played by Jack Long.
Yeah.
Yeah, you don't. I mean, I haven't seen any films with that character because Beggar So is the more popular one.
Mm-hmm.
Even The True Legend, which was like back in 2009.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was Carradine's last role. It was about Beggar So, and there's so many stories about Beggar So. In that movie, he was like in the army. He was a general. He came from money.
Right. And Beggar So is the same as it's the same as Sam the Seed in Drunken Master.
Yeah.
And Dance of the Drunken Manus. And I didn't have time to listen to the commentary or read the liner notes, but what I gather, because I've seen this film, I've been watching it every few years since like 1990 or 91. When I was able to, I had to rent a copy through the mail from a company out of Alexandria, Virginia called the Video Vault. And you would rent VHS tapes by mail. And that was like the one rare Kung Fu film they had. So I remember renting that and making a copy and watching it a few times. And I had seen the poster in the Rick Myers, Amy Harla, Bill and Karen Palmer book from 1985. From Bruce Lee to the Ninja, the martial arts movies. And they had a really cool poster for it with the credits of every name you would never remember. And you're like, oh, and they just wrote it off as like a Drunken Master ripoff. And it is a Drunken Master ripoff. Simon Yuen basically cameos in the beginning as Sam the Seed or Beggar So, and does like a quick Gung Fu Kata. He doesn't appear for the rest of the film. Doesn't do anything else. Then you have these other, who's playing Beggar So in this? It's, was it Lee Yi Min playing Beggar So?
Yeah.
Lee Yi Min is basically playing him for the rest of the film. So that was kind of deceptive. I think that was just so they could put Simon Yuen on the poster. Now, Simon Yuen, it had such a comeback as a character actor because of his appearance in Snake in the Eagle Shadow and Drunken Master that with the boom of all the knockoffs, ripoffs, imitations, suddenly Simon Yuen was very employable, and he would do like these 10-minute cameos, probably 3 or 4 days work for these films. And he appears in Dance of the Drunken Manus. he's in a bunch of others. There was one with Casanova Wong, which is like, I forget what the title of that one is, but it actually uses George footage Cameron from Drunken Master.
Drunken Fist Boston, I think it's called Story of the Drunken Master.
Yeah, it's got like several titles. It's got several alternate titles.
Right. Now, let me ask a question. And real stupid. Jack Long's in this, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dressed up at the start, and then that's the younger version of him, right?
Yep. Yeah.
That's yeah.
Yeah. Cause I've never seen him as the young version. I haven't seen many of his films. Only ever as the older, like the Seven Grandmasters, where he was, you know, obviously the teacher. Yeah, and he was at the start.
Old man.
No, he wasn't an old man, but I didn't realize he was as young looking as he was.
Notice him more as an old. I mean, he's more recognizable as an old man. Mm. There's some older stuff where he's not playing an old man.
Mm. Well, this is the first time. I had seen this before, but God, this is the first time in about 25 years I've seen it. And yeah, it's a lot. This one was, and I think I mentioned before when we did Seven Grandmasters, which was, well, it was early 2013, so 9 years ago.
Whoa.
Yeah. Yeah.
I didn't realize it was that long ago.
Damn. It was, yeah. I think it was February 2013 we did that. I'm pretty early on.
Uh-huh.
So anyway, this title, World of Drunken Master and Seven Grandmasters, was released on VHS here under the Asian Action sub-label, distributed by, I can't remember who, and they had the woman Chelsea Brown from, help me out, Laugh-In.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And she would introduce them at the start. And man, that was a good-looking woman, by the way. Shit, she was nice-looking. So that's where I knew it. I knew it from a high school friend who would talk about this film, this and Seven Grandmasters. So we watched it. I think I saw it once more, and that was 84, 85. And I watched it once more, I'd say about 95, 96, somewhere I saw it. Maybe an old VHS tape floating around somewhere.
Right.
And then that was it until this box set came out. Because I never really saw very good prints of it on YouTube. I wanted to watch it and get my same, but sort of repeat viewing via a really washed out, grainy print. So when this box set, obviously when we got this box set, I thought, well, it's a good time to watch World of Drunken Master and maybe discuss it and see how we go and seeing it in a, and man, I got to tell you, for those of you who are sort of on the fence about getting this set, get it. These prints are outstanding.
That's a stunner. I haven't even watched Seven Grandmasters yet. I'm waiting to have a friend over to watch it because he's never seen the film before.
Oh, okay.
He's a Kung Fu movie fan, but he's never watched a lot of the indie films.
Right.
And I said, well, we got to watch Seven Grandmasters because you got to see that one. That's the great one of the set.
Yeah.
But yeah, there was I believe a Miad disc, a DVD like in 2000, but of course it was Mandarin and maybe Cantonese only. And it wasn't HD, wasn't anamorphic, so it wasn't an ideal title to keep around. It wasn't really that great of a DVD. So I gave up hope we'd ever see anything like this. I remember I was just joking on one of our episodes from last year. I said, boy, would it be something if we had a Joseph Kuo Blu-ray box set. That'll never happen.
2 weeks later, I think, not even
2 weeks later, there's the announcement, Joseph Kuo Vengeance box set or whatever. I was just like, damn, I gotta start mentioning my obscure favorites that I want revived on video more often. There's a reverse of the curse here. But yeah, it's like this, seeing this on Blu-ray, I had such an appreciation for the visual aspect of it.
Yeah.
It looked fantastic.
Yeah.
And it just never had that effect before. I even wonder if I had seen the same film or the same edited version or whatever, because this seemed more action-packed, and it might just be because the picture quality was so good. I wasn't as eager to pause it, go take a break, go get a cup of coffee, you know, go check on the kid, that sort of thing. You know, I was kind of locked into it. I mean, you could count the leaves on the trees in the background. That's how good this transfer is.
Oh, this transfer is so good. You can see the black hair under the natural black hair.
Yeah. Yo, Jack Long, he doesn't benefit well from this. Wig is a little too obvious. They didn't spend too much time applying that wig.
Yeah, you can see the pencil marks on Jack Long's face making it look like wrinkles.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's kind of like when you watch the Shaw movies and you see the glue on their wigs and their sideburns and stuff. It's like, it's crazy. But yeah, I was blown away.
Yeah. And also the other guys with him, I don't know his name. I'm really embarrassed about the fact I don't know the guy's name.
Lee Yi Min.
Right. He's the one who played the student in Seven Grandmasters, correct?
Yeah, the one called Didi Ramone.
I called him Didi Ramone, did I? Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, actually, there is one guy in here. You know the guy who throws, not the stars, but the little knives at people? Like the little blades?
You talking about the Taoist priest?
Yeah, is that what it is? Yeah. Well, him on the Chris and Piers Morgan. I looked at him and go, she looks like Piers Morgan. So Didi Ramone's got a friend there. But that actor, Didi Ramone, is he the older version as well?
No, they got somebody else to play the older version.
I was going
to
say, that doesn't look like him at all.
Yeah, that, it mystified me as well.
Yeah, I don't know why they did it. Because I listened to the commentary a little bit, and I guess perhaps Lee wasn't around to do that scene, so they got somebody else.
Mm.
And I think the guy was not a martial artist, so like some of the moves he was doubled.
Right.
Then from other angles, you can see that it's him, you know, making it. So, yeah, again, I don't know why they did it that way.
Right. Yeah. But I don't know. But I was looking at him and go, it can't be the same guy. It looks nothing like him.
I wonder if the wraparound segments were an afterthought, if they had even planned it that way. Like maybe originally the film was just supposed to have them young and Simon Yuen was supposed to represent the old Sam the Seed and that was it. And they filmed the wraparound, I guess, to create more footage or make it a longer film. Because it's very short. It's like 88 minutes.
Yeah. And that's why they have, and Worth said that's probably why they added them two fight scenes at the end.
Right.
Pad it out. Make
them more. Pad it out. Yeah. Yeah. Because when I was watching this film again, I hadn't seen it for, 25 years. I basically had been wiped from my memory about it. I'm sitting there going, oh, yeah, cool. I've got this thing. Okay, we go back to when they're young. Must be a flashback. Well, that flashback goes 2/3 of the film.
Yeah.
It's really about 50. It's damn near under an hour of the story, which you think, what was the point of the whole start if we're going to just go back to all the flashback? But then we get, as you said, the wraparounds. Where we come back to when they're older. And I got to say, without spoiling the ending, wow, that's a good, decent ending. I really enjoyed it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think they kind of improvised an ending to make it a more satisfying film because clearly they had not filmed enough footage to comprise a full-length feature.
Yeah.
And I noticed something similar in, I think, the 36 Deadly Styles or whatever, another film on the set.
Yeah.
There's a scene with, like, Jack Long and another actor in old age makeup having a fight. It has nothing to do with the rest of the movie and it feels like it was an insert, like maybe it was left over from one of these productions and they just decided to put it in there to pad out time. And yeah, you see this happen in there's a Billy Chong movie, Kung Fu Zombie, that has a scene that's also in I think it's a Crystal Fist or vice versa, where it's just inserted in there to add an extra fight to lengthen. It's the same fight in both films, but it lengthens the running time and gives the audience more action. Because I guess they figure, hey, you know, the audience doesn't care. They just want more fighting. You know, they don't want a ton of dialogue.
Well, in terms of action, I mean, this one's got way, way more action than Seven Grandmasters. And that's pretty stacked with action. But there's that long period where with Seven Grandmasters, there's the fights. He goes through about four masters in 20 minutes of the film. Yeah. And there's that long period where there's pretty much nothing action-wise. There's a couple of action beats in there, but not many. Whereas this one just stacked from the start to finish. It's just one fight after another, after another, after another. It kind of seems like a bit of overkill. You could have had that periods of just pulling back and just resting and let the story progress a bit more, but really stealing grapes and stuff is not really much of a story you can expound upon a great deal. Like the scene with him, with the two of them, the two younger versions of them in that field, still in the grapes, and they're getting attacked by a dog. That was good because that was keeping the story moving and giving us something different besides another fight and another fight and another fight.
Right. Well, that's why when everybody acts like Bruce Lee's Game of Death was supposed to have all these different floors and levels, I don't believe it at all. It would have been dull as hell to have Bruce just going through different floors for like an hour fighting different fighters. It would make no sense. Like, obviously, it was supposed to be a finale set piece to some sort of James Bond type adventure. You're probably going to have car chases and shootouts and other types of fight scenes or action scenes in the first hour of the film. So, with here, what they did was they put in a lot of comedy. You're either telling the story, and this is what makes Taiwanese and Hong Kong directors so good at the at this type of filmmaking is they tell the story with either action or comedy. It just keeps moving. You don't slow down for romance. You don't slow down for heavy social drama or all the stuff that makes all our movies so dull and really a chore to sit through. You know, it's like you just, it just, it's like a Three Stooges short that's extended to 88 minutes and keeps that complete storytelling pace and just never slows down. You're either getting action or comedy, or you know, your jaw's dropping at a fight scene, or you're laughing at them stealing grapes, you know, whatever you want. It's like this is what they're so good at, and this Joseph Kwo was excellent at this. Another thing about this film is it has this these cool set pieces of like you got your Skrulls, you got your Bat Cave, which is a really remarkable scene where I think those are real bats flying around them. It because they didn't look fake. Like I was looking for the wires. I didn't see wires. Maybe they were brilliant fakes. I don't know. But I've been running at night and the bats came out when dusk hit and they were flying around me. None of them hit me. It looked like something out of a Batman movie.
That's strange you bring it up because I was at a friend's house a couple of weeks back with my brother and a couple of friends and they do that every Wednesday night, and I can get there sometimes. Sometimes I cannot. And this week I could. And I was sitting there, and we're talking. And I heard flap, 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 flap. I go, "The hell's that?" He goes, "Fruit bat." I said, "Shit." He goes, and my friend said to me, "The fruit bats aren't after you. They're after the fruit on the trees. So there's nothing to worry about." Yeah. So get going on what you're saying. Yeah, they don't care about you. They call fruit bats for a reason.
Right. Yeah, it looked like something out of Batman Begins. Like I'm jogging and there's all these bats swarming around me, but they're not hitting me. They're because they're looking for bugs. Yeah. Bugs and fruit, basically. Bugs and berries and everything else but me.
Reminds me of a story, actually, real quick. When I want to say it's probably about 96, I think it was, something like that. And I was living with my brother at the time for a brief period. I was walking down the street and outside his house was a tree, as there is, and walked through it, walked right through a fucking full beehive, like face straight through the beehive where the queen bee was, didn't get stung.
Oh, yeah,
man.
So there's that misnomer that, oh, you see a bee, you're going to get stung. Well, shit, my face went straight through. Must have hit about Christ knows how many bees. Didn't get stung at all.
Oh, man.
Of course, I shit my fucking pants, obviously. Man, that was, I'll tell you how that didn't happen. Not getting stung was incredible, but getting back to World of Drunken Master, what year was this one? Was this 77 or 79?
79.
Yeah, I got 79 on the listings.
Okay, then. Yeah. So, this obviously was, as you were saying before, it was a cash in on Drunken Master. I've never seen that one, the Jackie Chan film.
Mm-hmm.
Is it a worthy watch?
I mean, it's kind of essential with the genre, so I mean, you kind of got to watch it anyway. But whether or not you think it's great or mediocre is depending on, you know, how you accept it. I prefer Snake in the Eagle Shadow, which was the movie that really boosted Jackie Chan's career simply because it's a better story and the characters are more sympathetic. Problem I have with Drunken Master is Jackie Chan's Wong Fei Hung characterization is not a terribly sympathetic hero.
He's kind of a bully,
kind of a jerk.
Hmm. Okay. So I'll take it as a recommendation of a watch. Not is it sort of classed as a real canon piece of Chan's?
It's the one that made him huge. Like my friend Seton has these newspaper clippings from Hawaii in 78, and it's like, "See Chin Lung, Asia's new fighting sensation," and because they didn't call him Jackie Chan at the time, they just called him Chin Lung. The Chin Lung will amaze you in Drunken Master, and so they may have called it Drunken Monkey in a Tiger's Eye, which is the original Chinese to English translation. Then they call it Drunken Master, I think, to make it more marketable worldwide, and that title really stuck. But the actual title is Drunken Monkey in a Tiger's Eye.
Weird ass title. Is there a real, okay, remind me or inform me, is there a real drunken style of martial arts? Or
supposedly there is. It is not what you see depicted in the films.
Yeah.
What you see in the movies is a movie creation. So
Yeah, a lot of these forums are like made for just the movies. A lot of them don't exist in real life.
Yeah, they're taken from opera style, like opera. Like opera has, Peking opera has its own version of the fighting styles for the stage. And that's kind of what you're seeing is an exaggeration of those fighting styles, or like it's made very elaborate. You know, the way it would look, like if there's a snake style in Hungar or the real world, it's going to look a little different than how it's depicted in these movies, you know, because they don't owe the audience reality. These films are not realistic. I always laugh at the people who are like, yeah, man, you know, Bruce Lee, he beats up all these guards, like he could really do that. And, you know, he could have done it in real life. And it's like, no, it's a choreographed dance piece. Turn the volume down on these movies when they're fighting and they're dancing. It's like, it's very obvious. That's what you're seeing is choreography created through editing and enhanced through sound effects, which are wonderful. And of course, this fantastic dubbing. By the way, I highly recommend watching this English dub because the dubbing on this is hilarious. But what I also noticed in this film is the villains were doing very high Korean style kicks, very stylized Korean kicks. They weren't Chinese kung fu kicks, because Taekwondo was very popular in Southeast Asia at the time. So a lot of guys getting into the movies to get that kicking ability, because Bruce Lee kind of pioneered showing those real fancy high kicks. You had to go take a Korean style. You had to go take Hapkido or Taekwondo. That was the only way you were going to be able to do that, because it doesn't exist in the Southern kung fu systems, which are more hard stances and their hand fighting base. They're boxing or fist boxing.
And then they have the nothing. Northern styles, the kicks, they're not like that. They're more like more circular, like
They look like ballet circle kicks or something. They're like
wushu.
Yeah, wushu. If you see a wushu performance, they don't kick like Korean kickers or even Japanese Shotokan kickers. So that's what I noticed, is like, oh wow, I'm seeing a Korean stylist right there doing the Hapkido or Taekwondo style kicks in the end as a villain. And Lau Kar-young, who was Liu Jialiang's brother, the director of Eight Diagram Pole Fighter, Lau Kar-young had said that when kung fu movies were coming in vogue in 71, 72, they all took different styles so they could put those different styles into movies. And Hapkido was one of them. Yeah, and some of these guys took Taekwondo as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because Lau Kar-young, he said he had a whole bunch of different martial art books, and they would study from those and then learn from other teachers. And
you went for what looked good on camera, because those kicks look fantastic on camera. Realistic, like Muay Thai style kicks, it's boring to watch.
Muay Thai in real life does not look as good as it does on camera.
No, not at all. And Tony Jaa, Tony Jaa, when he's fighting in movies like Ong Bak, everybody talks about Tony Jaa and Ong Bak.
He's doing Taekwondo.
It's Taekwondo kicks. He's not doing Muay Thai. He's doing the stances or Muay Thai. He's doing Taekwondo kicks, though.
Taekwondo and gymnastics.
Yep. That's what looks good, you know. That's what matters. It's just got to look good. You know, Bruce Lee's mother system was Wing Chun. What's funny is when you watch his movies, he doesn't do a whole lot of Wing Chun in the movies. It looks like American, or kickboxing or
American Kempo. I mean,
yeah, it looks more like that. It just doesn't look like Wing Chun at all. I mean, he does a little bit of trapping. That's about it.
Okay.
Yeah, and the fights were choreographed by Yun Chun Yan. That's probably how they got Simon Yun in the film, because Yun Chun Yan is one of his sons. The other one of his brothers is Yin Wu Ping, who directed Drunken Master and Snake and the Eagle Shadow, and of course choreographed fights in The Matrix. That's what he's kind of famous for. But the Yun clan is basically this family of fantastic choreographers, very creative. Yun Chun Yan choreographed the fights in this, and they have that polish, they have that look. They're just like, they work. They're very exciting to watch. These guys can move. Yun Chun Yan in America choreographed the fights for Charlie's Angels several decades later.
And then the Daredevil movie with Ben Affleck.
Yeah, the Daredevil movie. In fact, they brought him in, I think, to enhance the fights in Daredevil, because what they had filmed before, it wasn't all that exciting. So they bring it. The tradition at that time was like, okay, bring in one of Yin Wu Ping's brothers and give us some fights that look like the stuff in The Matrix.
I'll tell you this. Pat Johnson is credited with choreographing the first two Ninja Turtle movies.
Yeah.
It was a young clan.
Right.
If you watch the credits, You'll see like Yun Chung.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Brandy Yun worked in that film, and some of those other guys did. It's like.
And then Lau Kar Leung, he did the stuff on the third film.
Right, which didn't get, apparently was lost on the editing floor. There's not much fighting in that film.
And really? That's the only one I've never seen.
It's not worth it. It's boring. It's like they cut all the fights out for no reason at all.
And it's like you have them in Feudal Japan, and it's like a total bore.
Mm-hmm. They don't even do ninja stuff. It's so lame.
Was Ninja Turtles the first one something to do with the Shaw Brothers? Or
it was Golden Harvest. Yeah.
Golden Harvest, that's what I meant, yeah.
Golden Harvest was originally going to film it for like $2 million at their studio in Hong Kong. And then the LA producer, Tom Gray, said, no, I could film this in the States if I get like a studio behind us. And I think they got 20th Century Fox at the time. And they started filming in at the old De Laurenti Studios in Wilmington, North Carolina, on the sets built for Year of the Dragon. And about a week into shooting, 20th Century Fox pulled out from the film. So then they scrambled and found New Line Cinema. New Line Cinema backed it, and it ended up being this runaway hit. I kind of course, sort of wish they'd made it in Hong Kong, because they would have gotten more of the Golden Harvest stunt guys and second unit guys, and it would have looked a lot more impressive, I think. But what they got, I mean, it's a fun film for what it is, and I totally get why it's so iconic. But boy, it could have been something amazing had they filmed it in Hong Kong, edited it in Hong Kong, everything.
Imagine the Jackie Chan stunt team doing stuff on that.
Oh, I know. It would have been amazing. It's like, instead they get Pat Johnson and a couple of the Yun guys got to bring in some cool ideas. But most of what you see in that film is Pat Johnson choreography. I hit you, you hit me. I hit you, you hit me. That's how he choreographs fights. It's like, it's Karate Kid. He choreographed fights in the... I guess all three Karate Kid movies.
Yeah.
I don't know who did it in Next Karate Kid, but the first three were Pat Johnson. It's I hit you, you hit me. You'll notice they didn't bring him back for Cobra Kai. So those fights have a bit more polish.
Yes.
You know, to look like they're trying to catch up with all we know now, you know.
Just imagine if they had an Isaac Florentine or somebody back then.
And the business just doesn't foster that type of eye, that type of camera eye for this action. They don't get it. You know, the reason the Hong Kong movies look so good, those editors know how to edit this stuff.
And what I love about
cinematographers, they know how to film it. You know, it's just like they know what they're doing.
And the thing about the Hong Kong guys is I love that they allow the stuntmen to act and actually perform.
Right. And of course it's easy for them. Their voices are never recorded. So they could have a bad voice. They're gonna be dubbed anyway in Mandarin, Cantonese, English, whatever. But yeah, this film, I was amazed how much I enjoyed it this time. I'd always thought it was just one of those decent films that I watched on old crop copies and everything. But watching it on this set, I was like, man, this thing's great. This is almost as good as Seven Grandmasters. I mean, I love both movies.
Oh, I don't know about that. That's a stretch.
I mean, Seven Grandmasters is still like that's the best movie on the set. It's not even a debate, but...
If you look in the background, that's the projector I have hooked up for my living room. And that's how I'm watching these movies now.
That's the best way to do it. I got a 75-inch TV
on a big screen.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. I agree. That's how I watch this one.
TV screen does not do these films justice.
Yeah, you got to have that visual. I only invested in a big screen because of all the Shaw films coming out. And I said, well... You know, I can't stand these on a tube TV or even a little widescreen TV. I've got to have a big ass screen to appreciate this stuff. And that's why I got like a 75 inch right now. As soon as there's a really good 100 inch, I'll probably buy that.
You know, next place I move to, I'm just going to have a room just for that. Just build a screen, give me a cloth.
A whole wall where you can watch Kung Fu films all the time.
Yes.
Neighbors will think you're nuts. They're hearing all these dub voices say, right.
Well, that's what I'm doing now. I just move the TV out the way when I, crank it up.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You'd like my home theater, Frank. It's pretty sweet. 11-foot screen, my friend. Awesome. It is. Yeah, it really is.
You got a digital projector and everything?
Yeah. It's all hooked up, professionally hooked up at the hanging from the ceiling on brackets and.
Nice.
It is done. Yeah. Cost a few bucks.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Did you get that contractor through Lord Humongous's video store?
No, I didn't. No.
That would have been awesome. To show up at Hockey Bass, just install it. Yeah.
Come around and watch Mad Max 2 together. I don't even know if he's got his store anymore after all the shit that's happened the last couple of years here with everything, like a lot of places
right.
dying here. I don't know. But anyway, yeah, that that theater room was not cheap, but yeah, boy, it's Frank asked. Yeah, he's worth every damn penny.
Yeah,
it's awesome. Yeah, and which is funny because when I was going through the book that comes with this box set, it even tells you if you've got motion flow or auto something on there on your projector, turn it off because it's going to ruin the look of the film. I've never seen that listed or advertised on any sort of film before, home video release before for anything.
Mm-hmm.
But it just say, yeah, turn it off because that way, because by doing that, it will misrepresent the way the film was meant to have looked.
Right.
I turned it off and turned it off, tried it with it on, and yeah, it makes a difference.
Yeah.
Fills you with projectors with that function on there, which I think it's all of them. And you're watching this, all the other ones, turn it off and enjoy as it was meant to be seen. And, to have these things all cleaned up, people could say, oh man, I want the grain and the dirt. Stick
no, you don't.
Oh,
no, that was a 35 millimeter fetishist, make me sick. I hate all that idiocy.
It's because as much as I appreciate film, I mean, but that's not how it was meant to be. It was meant to be seen crystal clear.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm supposed to have jump frames like Machete and green stripes go with streaks and stripes, and burnout, you know, frames and all that nonsense. It's like supposed to be supposed to look clean.
Like fabric over the camera to make it look grainy and
right. That's why I'll always respect William Friedkin for ripping on the 35 millimeter revival. Like he tells Quentin Tarantino, you can show this film as long as I don't have to be there. Because he says, I can't stand 35 millimeter and I don't want to watch my movies in 35 millimeter anymore. Which, for whatever craziness he does to the remasterings of his films on Blu-ray, I do respect him for that, his stance against the 35 millimeter revival.
I was watching this movie about Cinerama or something years ago.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, and I get that there were guys who were car-carrying union members who would project the movies and stuff.
Yeah.
I respect that, but you got to keep with the times.
Yeah, it's kind of like vinyl. It's like the vinyl collector thing.
Just going to bring that up. You're going to bring that up. Because I just bought, as I mentioned on an episode back, I bought a turntable. Yeah, I bought a turntable because I got on my vinyl. And I thought, you know, I'm sick of them being in storage. And there's stuff on there you cannot get on CD. It's just some things, like granted, they're more sort of local and independent releases. I've never seen a light of day on the CD format. And I hooked it up. I go, man, I got to really crank this thing up to hear what the fuck's going on as opposed to a CD. Yes, it sounds good. But it is an old relic of its time. And for those who buy vinyl with new releases, you know, you want to do it, you want to do that. But they're made for the CD format.
Yeah.
They're mastered for the CD format. So why would you get something and downgrade it to an analog sound to make it sound better, think it's going to sound better? I don't think it does.
It's junk science.
It is. Yeah. I mean, like the new Ghost album's come out. I want to pick it up, mm-hmm. you know, Wednesday. I'll head out and pick it up. And I could get that Amazon white vinyl one that they got, which is double the price of the CD.
Yeah.
Because it's going to look good, but it ain't going to sound that good.
Yeah.
So
you can't play it in your car.
Exactly. Can I play in your car? Yeah.
You cannot play it in your car.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I don't regret buying the turntable because, like I said, there's things I've got that you can't get anywhere else. And I do enjoy it. And you can still pick up some things. But stores these days around here, I don't know where it is where you boys are at, have got this insane notion. Oh, we're just going to bump the price up 15 times as much as what it was ever worth.
Yeah.
In the period when, you know, you don't need Benny Goodman's greatest hits beaten up for 10 bucks. It's something you could have given away for a dollar.
It's like you go to Walmart and you see these vinyls that are insanely priced and it's like, really?
Yeah. And also the Pulp Fiction one. I mean, I've got the CD. That'll do me. I don't think they ever got a vinyl release back in 1994 when it came out.
No.
Well, it's on there now. And I was with one of my sons. He goes, oh, cool, the Pulp Fiction soundtrack. I said, first of all, this is way too pricey. I said, number one, I picked up the CD for a buck at a thrift store. And not to mention the worst part of it was the colors were all bled on the cover. It looked awful. The picture of Mia Wallace, what's her name? Uma Thurman.
Mm-hmm.
It was just a poor print of the cover. It was just awful.
Oh, weird.
And you want to pay $50 for that?
Woo!
Go ahead. Mm. Vinyls here are not cheap. I mean, really, you know, you go to some of the local stores.
If you go to like a Goodwill store or something like that, you can look out. But I mean,
I'm not buying
anything new on vinyl.
Well, I picked up the Sting soundtrack for $3 at a Goodwill.
Mm-hmm.
And the cover's in great shape. The vinyl's in great shape. I have to get myself a vinyl washer as well for my vinyls, because mm-hmm. they do need to be cleaned up. But once it's cleaned up on that, it's worth the $3.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it ain't worth $25 at some places. When it's priced like that, these are places who don't know what they're doing. They just think, oh, everybody wants them. It's like VHS tapes, which we've really sort of de-championed, for the lack of a better word.
Yeah.
You know, you could have this retro, feeling of, oh, and I rented out this tape. I rented out the old Warriors VHS. Right. No, it doesn't. It sucks. The quality sucks.
And it's bulky. Could you imagine buying the Quaz set in VHS form?
No.
I rented a 7 Grandmasters in like 1990 that was a George Tan bootleg, probably a purchase from a distributor in New York. It was like, it had a terribly scanned cover and everything, because it never got a legit release in America until the Media Blasters DVD. But I mean, the quality wasn't bad. It was like obviously taken right off of a Hong Kong English language VHS, but it was actually one of the better George Tan bootlegs, I'd say. But I have no romantic attachment to that. I think it's silly. No. I think that's what they're selling, is they're selling this kind of romantic ideal.
Selling you memories from your childhood.
Memories that didn't exist.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like with these cult movies, how this romantic fascination with canon films and all that.
It's delusional. It's like when I bought a Led Zeppelin record, what's the first thing I did? I made an audio cassette on a TDK Gold 90 so I could play it in the car. that's my childhood memory, is a lot of work. And then you had to, you stupidly like label the cassettes. You had all the songs, you knew what songs you
had to label the inserts. And
yeah, and if you wanted to be real obsessive, you would write the time down on the cassette.
And then when you rubbed over that tape, you had to get the liquid paper and scrub over that. The new recording on there. It's just,
oh man, I misspelled Dire Maker. Damn it. And then you'd be all OCD about it,
Yeah.
I don't miss it.
I don't. No, I don't. And VHS tapes are great to look at the covers. Okay, yes, we've always said that the covers for VHS tapes are way better than the Blu-ray releases, even the CD releases. But with the custom covers that you can make these days.
Exactly.
You can recreate those things.
Yes.
So, like the one I put out of the Into the Dragon that I made, because I looked around, I saw other ones. I thought they look okay, but they're not quite the look of the UK VHS release from 81, which I thought was always the best looking one. So, it took me a few hours to do, and I had to find parts and pictures and blah, blah, blah. But I eventually did it. And when I get the opportunity, I'll go back and print it up. And that will replace the shitty cover that came with the 40th anniversary edition of the Into the Dragon Blu-ray I have, which I don't like. I also made the other four Bruce Lees, the early ones, the Hong Kong titles. They were released here in all white with the Hong Kong posters? And they all looked uniformed, where they had Fist of Fury, Game of Death, Big Boss.
Right.
Right. I remade, I custom made those as well. So, because the covers I have, I don't like. If you're going to put them out, and if I can't find them on the custom cover sites that I'm on, that I'm a member on, mm-hmm. well, then I'll make it myself.
Right.
They're arduous, they're time. But once they're done, they're done. And I'll just put them out there for other people to say, hey, I made these. You want them, take them. If you don't, you don't. No big deal. But the VHS, retrospective love that people have is, the covers are great. Yeah, but the tapes are shit. You're not buying a VHS tape to stare at the cover like that. You're buying it to watch the tape, and it's crap.
Right.
Yes.
Not that they weren't important at the time. No, they were the game changer of everything.
Mm-hmm.
Not to totally discredit VHS tapes at all and say, are you guys VHS haters? No, we're not. Because they're a massive part of my youth and John's and Frank's youth. as kids.
But you have to go with the times. Technology changes.
Exactly. You've got to go with the times. That's why DVD was the massive game changer back in the mid-90s, mid to late 90s. Because that took the VHS forward format and said, right, this subpar quality you had, well, now we're going to increase it. And honestly, since then, we've had sort of really incremental increases in quality. Blu-ray is better, but some don't look as good as a VHS. Some of them, they're really poorly made. These are the smaller companies.
Yeah.
And 4K, don't get me started. 4K, I own some, but 4K is not the format I race out to get. I don't really
care. Right, yeah, that's a little...
Yeah,
it's not
much of an increase in picture. It's not exponential at all.
Plus, if I like new movies, it might matter, but I don't. So, you know.
No, I can't. Yeah.
What, I'm going to buy The Batman in 4K? You know, I'm not.
You know, well, I was talking to our friend Mulder, Eric Mulder over at Watch This Movie. He was messaging back and forth and he goes, going to go watch The Batman. I said, yeah, I'll go watch it. I thought, I don't know if I can sit through 3 hours. I know
the time.
I don't have the time. Should not be 3 hours.
It should be 100 minutes. 100 minutes at best.
Yeah, it's really like saying, would you watch a 3-hour kung fu film?
I bought Touches In on the Criterion Blu-ray like 4 or 5 years ago. I've never watched it. Never watched that Blu-ray because it's finding the time to sit down and watch that movie for 3 hours.
Now, I don't know how true this is, but apparently there's this movie called Ninja the Final Duel, the Robert Klein movie.
Yeah.
There's like been 9 hours worth of footage filmed.
It was shot as a mini series, but it was edited into two films. And honestly, you don't need any more than what's in those two films because what's in there is pretty silly, but also fun to watch at the same time. But honestly, you don't need that to be any longer than it is.
Also, like Kill Bill. They go, oh, we want Kill Bill, the final cut or the whatever they want, where it's a two film stitched together with the extra footage, which is out there. If you want it, it's out there. I've got the DVD of it. But you're going to sit through a 4-hour film, really, one hit?
And the second part felt really padded out.
Yeah.
With the dialogue and everything. It's like the first film was an action movie. The second film is not. And it's like, honestly, could you deal with the first half of the film being action packed? The second half, no action, hardly any action at all.
And then what was filmed for the second part was cut out.
Right.
Mm. Yeah. Basically deleted scenes, for a couple of hours.
I have no desire. I don't, they were okay when they came out, but I don't like them enough to want to see some expanded edition. I just, doesn't affect me that way.
Why watch Kill Bill when you actually watch an actual Hong Kong film?
Yeah, exactly. If you can watch a real thing, you don't need the imitation. You don't need your grocery store brand soda if you can get Coca-Cola. Exactly. It's like, there's just no reason.
It's the high fructose corn syrup of kung fu films.
Yeah, exactly.
Not the real sugar.
It's the generic brand, the grocery store house brand, with the high fructose corn syrup.
White label, the red stripe.
Yeah. It's like, you got American Coca-Cola and you got Mexican Coca-Cola, which has real sugar. I think I'm going to go for the real sugar. So that's what I do with the Hong Kong movies and the Japanese films. It's like American imitation is not going to do it for me.
And the same thing goes for Jackie Chan. Why watch like Protector or Rush Hour or anything? You can watch the real stuff. You can watch Spartan X.
Watch anything he made before 1990. Anything Police Story 2 and before, and it's a lot more interesting than anything he made afterwards.
Just real quick, what do you guys think of Battle Creek Brawl?
It's okay. I didn't like it so much when I was a kid because I was like, why is he fighting so slow? Because I had seen Snake and the Eagle Shadow and thought, oh, whoa, he's amazing. And then I watched Big Brawl, which is what we called it on cable for years. I saw the Big Brawl and I was like, why is this the same guy? I wasn't sure because he's fighting wrestlers and he had to fight slower for the wrestlers and they didn't do any undercranking or whatever. But now I watch it and it's way more entertaining than stuff like The Tuxedo.
Yes.
Rush Hour 3.
Mr. Nice Guy. That was awful.
My thing with Jackie is I saw more Bruce. I mean, Jackie, when I was a kid, he wasn't as accessible. So, yeah. I mean, you appreciate his Hong Kong stuff. But as far as Battle Creek Brawl, I mean, especially today's age, is watchable. And when you watch on the wall, I mean, it's not horrible, but it's just a real limp dick attempt to get him over to the American crowd.
Yeah, it just didn't. It didn't have what it needed to be a hit with Americans. Like they needed something more like his Hong Kong movies, where he's fighting people of equal speed. Yes. And a better director than Robert Klaus. I mean,
oh God, Robert Klaus.
They should have gotten Hal Needham. I honestly think if Jackie got along with Hal Needham should have directed The Big Brawl.
Yeah,
you know, that would have been better. He would have given Jackie, oh, what do you want to do? Jackie's like, oh, I want to flip and pick up a broomstick. He goes, go ahead and do it, because Hal Needham would have respected Jackie's desire to show off his stunt work, and Robert Klaus didn't. Robert Klaus thought he was lowering himself with these martial arts movies that he was always making. You know, he wanted to make horror crap and
serious stuff.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He thought he was too good for it. But Hal Needham should. If Hal Needham had directed The Big Brawl, it probably would have been a hit.
Yeah.
Anybody but Robert Klaus, because I watched that Tom Selleck Golden Harvest movie Lassiter.
Yeah,
it's not terrible, but if they got like that director to do the American martial arts stuff,
right,
it wouldn't have been as crappy.
Yeah, well, look how they screwed up Cynthia Rothrock. You know, it's China O'Brien. They made two China O'Brien movies, and they're terrible. And they're directed by Robert Klaus. Like, why are you going back to this guy who's deaf? That was actually done for a Canadian producer. It was like she did China O'Brien 1 and 2 as she was starting to get some attention in America for her work in the Hong Kong movies like Yes, Madam, and there was a couple others like Millionaire's Express. So Golden Harvest thought she was going to be the next big thing, so they started making China O'Brien, which was based on Robert Klaus's original script for The Protector when he was going to direct the Jackie Chan movie The Protector. He had written a script about a cop who refuses to use a gun, and so he reformatted the script for Cynthia Rothrock. Now recently information came out that Robert Klaus and Golden Harvest had been planning a movie titled China O'Brien since 1977. I don't know who it was planned for. I don't know if they thought they were going to work out a deal with Chuck Norris or something, but that's an old project. I was really stunned when I saw that. Because somebody came out with their press ad that they would put in Variety, you know, in 1977. Golden Harvest announces these projects. And, you know, and maybe they just had a title back then. It was like Canon Films or Charles Band at Empire Films. They just came up with titles and tried to build a movie around it, depending on how much attention they got. Who knows? Because China O'Brien is a cool pulp-sounding title. You know, it's like Doc Savage or something.
It's like those films are more suited for canon.
Yeah. Yeah. They're just kind of lame. And why they didn't just get Sammo Hung to direct it, or somebody, one of their Hong Kong directors who was English fluent. I don't know. Maybe they think distributors won't buy the films with a Chinese name, directed by Chui Hark, directed by Sammo Hung.
Maybe they won't play in the suburbs.
Right. Or something. I think it's about selling to distributors. It's a weird thing, you know? And luckily, when Rumble in the Bronx broke through, then they could put out a movie directed by Sammo Hung, and it didn't matter. You know, but too bad. Unfortunately, Jackie was making his worst movies ever by then. So, you know, he kind of broke in too late.
I still think that somehow the Police Force cut should have played in the theater, but
should have in 1988. But the problem is the way that film looked, you couldn't release it in theaters 5 years later. It would have looked outdated, you know?
Yeah.
You know, that's just the way American audiences are and the way theater owners are. But it's like, well, like with this film, it kind of reminds me of the strength of this genre. It's not about one actor. It's not about, oh, I only watch Bruce Lee movies. I only watch Jackie Chan movies. It's, you could watch all sorts of films and there's all these different talents in this genre that you can appreciate. You can watch a Bronsman movie one night, you can watch a Seven Grandmasters the next, then you can watch your Shaw Brothers movie, then you can watch your Golden Harvest and your Cecil. You got so much variety. Why would you just stick with one actor
or
one studio? There's so much to choose from in this genre. It's so fun to dig around in it. You know, it's like listening to music. You just gonna listen to Motorhead your whole life?
The possibilities are limitless. I mean,
that's the advantage of the genre, and that's why I hate it when people tell me I only watch Bruce Lee movies and I don't watch anybody else. It's like, no, you don't get it. It's variety. That's the advantage to this genre.
Yes.
It's very, you know, it's like, I'd rather, sometimes I'm in the mood for a Shaolin movie. Sometimes I want a dumb basher film with bad dubbing and the hero just swinging his arms and stabbing people with a knife. You know, I don't know.
Sometimes you want to watch a Girls with Gun movie. I mean,
yeah, yeah. Sometimes you want to watch Moon Lee fight Yukari Oshima. You know, women throwing each other around and blowing them up with grenades. It's like, that's the fun of the genre. But, you know.
Speaking of that, getting back to this film, mm-hmm. without ruining the ending for those who do want to see it, anybody buy the ending with the woman?
No, that was so lame.
Really?
Yeah, the Manosphere crowd probably would have had something to say about it, but I mean...
Yeah.
Oh, you know what? That's a good point you bring up, Frank, because I was sitting there thinking this film should have been called World of Simpin' Master. Man, in a long ass time.
Maybe that should be the title of the episode.
It's World of Simpin' Master.
World of Simpin' Master. So we don't get people confused like they probably were with our Great Rock and Roll Swindle episode.
Yeah, yeah, nah. With the amount of dislikes that it got compared to the likes.
People were mad.
Clicking on it, going, "Oh, cool! Rock, Great Rock and Roll Swindles on YouTube." It's three guys talking about it. Forget it. But yeah, I was watching that going, just walk away from this woman. Just, you know, come and see me. No, come and see me. No. Yeah. Should, that's why I needed the Coach Greg Adams soundboard there. I had to bring up CGA. Well, Frank's here, of course. But,
Coach Greg Adams say, A-Walt.
A-Walt, yeah. But, yeah, I mean, I didn't buy the ending much, but what are you going to do? You know, it's just, it is what it is, especially with the image of the woman beforehand, or the dummy, should I say, what happens. Yeah, it's just, nah. But, I mean, look, it was cool. It was cool to see Jack Long with no makeup on. So I'm sitting going, I really sat there for about half an hour going, it looks like him. Is it him or is another actor being him when he's young? Because, as I said, the Didi Ramone guy, I forgot his name.
Lee Min. Yeah.
That's it, yeah, Didi.
Or some people call him Simon Lee.
Yeah, Simon Lee.
Oh, he's the one who's credited as Simon Lee in the film.
Yeah.
Oh, right. I was watching the titles going, damn, there's a lot of anglicized names in here. A lot. But, Simon Lee, anyway, so... when he was the, like I said earlier, when he was the younger version, the real self, compared to the older one, go, that's not the same guy. That's all you know is Jack Long, but yeah, you can tell by the facial structure, it's him. And yeah, so that was that. But look, let's go ahead and rate this thing before we finish up. Frank, you're our guest. And a non-belligerent one this time. Nice to see. And you come back. You've served your 5-month, period of
probation.
Probation. That's the one. I'm hey, I'm losing.
Glad I made it this far. I give it a solid 8.
Give it an 8. Okay. No worries. Very good. What about you, John?
I give it a 7.5. I really enjoyed it this time.
All right, I'm going to give it a 6.5. And that's not to say that it's bad. It's just that it really threw me with the start, with the first 20 minutes, and then all the massive flashback that we got.
Yeah.
And then bringing it back to where we started. It's 6.5 with an asterisk, which means it will be watched again.
Okay.
For sure. I really want to dig in. Now that I've got another couple of days of ISO at home, and pretty much all the work we've been doing at home is done. I want to dig into this one. What's the next one I should go for? Obviously, I'm not watching Seven Grandmasters. I've seen it.
I really liked Return of the 18 Bronzemen.
Yeah, that was a good one. I would say that's better than the first one.
It is. It is much better. And my memory was completely messed up because in the old days, I would have told you the first one was better. But watching them in HD, good Lord, the second one blows it away. It's like way better thought out.
We need to see the first one to understand the second
one. No, they're not related. They just have the same gimmick. But you can you can watch them in reverse. I think that's a better way because Return of the Brosman is so much more fun. And I was surprised how much I enjoyed the old Master. Because I never liked that one on previous versions. And I don't know, I enjoyed it in HD. But I also got to see all the, like, L.A.'s Chinatown. You know, saw what it looked like back then. And there's Los Angeles locations that I recognize. So that
was like, cool. When you see L.A. Chinatown in real life, it's so much different than what you see in the movies.
Yeah.
Is it?
It is.
Mm-hmm. Okay. In what way?
I mean, it just doesn't seem, I mean, it's a big place, but at the same time, it isn't. It's maybe like a couple blocks.
Yeah.
I'd say the real Chinatown is like Alhambra, or I don't know if I'm saying it right, Alhambra, and then Monterey Park. Mm-hmm. I mean, right. LA Chinatown is it's touristy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like if you go by where Bruce Lee had his school in LA's Chinatown, you'd be stunned at what a dump it was. It's like this small building. It was like a basement concrete room. You know, we stood outside it and it was just like, it's not impressive. It doesn't look like a big pagoda or anything. It's just like a room. It's like where I took Taekwondo when I was in high school. Like it's just a concrete floor in a room with no running water or anything. Just like a basement room, you know.
It's like Elvis Presley Boulevard in Memphis. People seem to think it's this. Yeah, it's pretty run down.
Yeah,
it's like bad. I've never been there, but I heard Graceland's like in the middle of the hood.
Yeah, it is.
Oh yeah.
You drive through and you're hearing like Snoop Dogg and NWA, and then you know you get out in Graceland, stand in line for 5 hours to get in.
That song "In the Ghetto" was written outside. Elvis looking outside his window. I think.
Like, hey man, it's looking a little rough out there, you know.
Yeah,
I think I just saw a drive by.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. So I gave it 6.5, and I think I might go with that old Master one because he said they go to L.A.
Yeah, it's Joseph Quo filming in Los Angeles and Hollywood, doing on location filming and stuff, and working with American actors. It's pretty fun.
And you get Jackie Chan's Sifu as the lead actor.
Yeah, the sadist that like abused all those kids. Just like basically a child. It stars a child abuser who like beat Sammo Hung and Yen Bu and Jackie Chan when they were young kids.
Yeah, you're like stick. Jackie Chan's like, I gotta go piss, but you know, bap, bap, bap.
Yeah,
bap,
yeah. He just hit him with a switch and made him, you know, curled him into pretzels, like human pretzels, like so they could be acrobatic. So yeah, he's the star. So.
Sounds like DDP yoga.
Yeah. You'll like the stolen disco score. It's real fun.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
You got me.
They steal some Euro disco music.
Mm-hmm. Little tribute for this film. The actor who plays the teacher in this movie, he played the Japanese interpreter in Fist of Fury 2.
Ah.
Oh, did he? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right. What's his name?
Chinwai Lu.
All
right. He's another Taiwanese talent.
I reckon there'll be a high def release of that this year, Fist of Fury 2. I reckon someone's going to put it out. Probably maybe Eureka.
I think there is now a gold rush for this stuff because it's sold so well for Eureka and it's sold so well for Arrow that they're starting to realize, and 88 Films has really gone big with it because they realize these Hong Kong movies in HD, they're selling great on Blu-ray, better than their horror stuff, I bet. And I think they're really taken aback. So you're going to start to see the floodgates open very soon. You know, if they're not already, I think we're going to get a second Joseph Quo box set because a lot of his really good movies were not in the this set, like Mystery of Chess Boxing and what's another one? The Unbeatable 28, The Unbeaten 28,
The Eight Masters,
Blazing Temple. Those are all great movies. Like they need HD releases. So I think you can expect to see that soon.
I'll even add Triangular Drill to that because that's an early Quad Basher, but I'm kind of partial to it because it showed the Japanese artists as actually the good guys.
Right. So it's like, it could be, I think you're going to see another Joseph Quo box set. It's not unimaginable.
It's sold. I'm sold on it for sure. I'll be getting it.
Yeah, because this set is great. You can get it through American Amazon. Just make sure you have a, you know, one of those wonderful Blu-ray players that can play anything.
And they're really not that expensive.
No, not at all.
God, we've been saying that for bloody years in the show. Just get one, you cheap bastards.
I mean, yeah,
they don't it's cost worth that it. Much. Yeah. Yeah. And worth every cent.
All right. So, Frank, anything to plug this week?
Not right now. I mean, I'm just slugging away at life.
Yeah, we all are.
Trying to make a few things happen, and
especially in this clown world. Good Lord. Yes. Stu, do we have any announcements or anything you want to make this week?
I was just on Watch This Movie with Mr. Mulder and Wolfie talking about Crocodile Dundee. And yeah.
Oh, well, I guess it's going to delay our Garrow episode where we get him I'm laughing and wheezing for 2 hours.
I'm not watching that fucking movie ever again. Ever. One of the biggest pieces of shit I've seen. It's so bad. Which gives you an insight to what my final grading of the film was.
I don't think it's going to surprise anybody.
No.
Not listeners of this show. Maybe listeners of Watch This Movie, but not listeners of this show.
Mm. All right. But if we ever did that thing with Garrow, I mean, we could do that new one, that new Dundee, but or the one in Los Angeles. That's bad.
I couldn't get through it. I was trying to watch it on stream. I couldn't get through it. I just couldn't follow. I just couldn't do it. 15-20 minutes. I was done.
I was stuck in a damn theater watching that thing with my brother and a couple of mates. And we were just like this. Like, do we go? Do we just get up and leave? This thing is friggin' horrid. But, we stuck it out.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Well, hey, it wasn't Lightning Jack.
Oh, I saw that at the drive-in as well.
I've never seen it.
That was the night I got... That was the night Lightning Jack, yeah. That was the night I got that pizza from that pizza joint. Drove to the drive-in, thought, cool, I have some pizza. I'll watch this film. Bit into the pizza. Halfway through it, one of the guy's teeth had fallen out into the pizza, cooked into the pizza. A bit struck with his fucking tooth. I was like, okay, that was a premonition to what the night was going to be by sitting here and watching this crap film on the screen. I never went back to that shit. Oh, he's gone now. He's shut down years ago, thank God. But, ugh.
Wow.
I had to think, is it one of mine? I felt all around my mouth. No, it's not one of mine. But, yeah. Funny enough, I actually had pizza the other night. I had it that night. I was with my friends. We were talking about the fruit bat. Earlier, I go, jeez, I'm not enjoying this at all. I hadn't had pizza for years. I go, fuck, I'm not enjoying this. And then the wife got it again the other night. I go, that's it. And look, if you get it, you guys get it. Don't order it for me. I'm not going to eat this shit. I can't stand it. I'm not a fan of pizza at all. Not these days. I'd rather have a chicken sandwich or something. So, you know.
Right.
But fuck, yeah. No, thank you. But anyway, off my dietary habits and my, you know, food intake, etc. The only other plugs I got is I'm going to experiment doing things for the MMC channel for YouTube, which will be more content on there, but they won't be out to replace an episode. So if you see me doing a ranking the albums of, I don't know, the Misfits or something like that, even though we've done the Misfits Rock Month or whoever, Rocket from the Crypt, don't think, oh shit, that's the episode this week, so therefore there won't be nothing, because it could be a show, or the most likely will be an episode as well. It's just an extra piece I'm doing just to play around with video and put it up on the on the channel. Most likely videos I do will be music related, not really film, because film is stuff I want to keep for when I record with the MMC. But you know, as soon as Rock Month is dead on here, I thought it might be cool to go back and visit the discography of ZZ Top and rank the ZZ Top albums and talk about them or whatever. And there won't be things like a 90 minutes. They'll be 15 minutes, short pieces. But yeah, just sort of keep pumping content into the thingo. And somebody stumbles across it and might say, oh, these guys are a podcast. Well, I'll check them out and hopefully get new listeners, new viewers, etc.
Yeah.
Just if you ain't putting shit out, people ain't going to find you.
Yeah, it's true. It's very true.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's it.
don't expect one of those every week. They'll be, they'll come out as they come out. The more, as I get more and more sort of evolved into the program I'm using and getting to know how to use them and using pictures and text and all that, you know, I'll put more out. But yeah, that's what I've got planned for the MC channel for YouTube. And I'll be video, pretty much video only, because I'll be a visual piece only.
It's right, pointless. Right.
Yeah.
No all right, yeah.
So yeah, that's it. Yeah, that's my overly long rant about what I've got coming up or in the pipeline.
Okay.
All right.
Well, with that said, I'll just I'll say peace out.
Sayonara.
Thank you for listening to the Midnight Movie Cowboys. For more information, go to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com. For feedback, comments, or show suggestions, go to midnightmoviecowboys@gmail.com. Like what you hear? Head on over to iTunes and leave us a review. Hear us on Stitcher Radio. Head over to Stitcher.com and download the app. Want to help the show out? Head on over to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com and hit the PayPal donate. We appreciate all donations of any denomination. Find us on Twitter at MMCowboys. Like us on Facebook. Head over to Facebook.com. Type in Midnight Movie Cowboys. Hit the like button over there. Want to friend us personally on Facebook or follow us on Twitter? Go to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com and find the links from there on the right-hand side. Thanks for listening. See you all next week.